Happy almost Thanksgiving to those of you in Radio Land. You're right. I only knew one person who used the term Radio Land or something close to it. It would have been the late Dane Suter, who worked with us at WBEX and also at WFCB, both in Chillicothe. Dane was one of those interesting people who he wasn't really suited for it, but he was suited for it. He could push buttons as well as anyone else, but he was an eccentric little bug. I just happen to remember him now as I was doing this introduction. Here we are again. We are with Epiphany. We're up to chapter 24. As we were hearing on chapter 23, just a few minutes ago, we're talking about a pair of shotguns being shown at both Beasley and Pastor Dan. But chapter 24 is actually starting right back in Magnolia. Along with, let's just go to it. Chapter 24. Hope Stevens appeared at her mother's bedside early on Thursday morning, urging her to get up and make breakfast before her grandparents came to pick her up. Emily followed her youngest downstairs into a whirlwind of activity. Frank the dog was going back and forth between Grace and Peter, trying to catch a tidbit. Jacob made French toast and managed to find some frozen sausage patties, which he thawed in the microwave. "You better not be feeding that to any of that sausage-tarred dog," Emily admonished Pete. "It's because he's Jewish and can't eat pork, right?" Gracie spoke up. "Who told you that?" Emily asked. "Daddy says it all the time," she defended herself. "And just like him," she chuckled and nodded. She almost caught herself asking where Dan was until she realized that he was still in West Virginia, still on the mountain. Eventually, everyone had settled down and final preparations were made for the trip they were about to make. Emily's parents arrived just after 9, driving a rented van. "Well, you could have taken mine," Emily chided them. "And leave you with nothing but your feet to get around in," Ken Griswold pointed out. "But your car is in the shop. It won't be ready until tomorrow afternoon at the latest." Emily kissed her parents goodbye after making sure that all of her children were secure. Her phone was ringing when she finally went back inside. She had dealt with the usual deluge of pastoral calls while doing the dishes. There were visitors, including Mayor Fair with a progress report on the new church and Steve Mulligan with an apology for the previous evening's sermon. "I'll do better next time," he promised. She gently suggested having a long talk with Dan or her father before attempting a next time. As expected, or rather arranged, Debbie Wallace appeared on Emily's doorstep just after noon, wearing an attractive summer dress which looked as if it had been ripped off from an early 70s Sears catalog. "Emmeline Wyndham chose the outfit," Debbie explained when Emily asked. "It's not too revealing, is it?" She spun around slowly to get approval. "I like the print," Emily opined. "If anything, though, it might be a little too modest." "Paul prefers modest," Debbie replied. "That may be part of the reason I'm still apprehensive about this afternoon." "And it's probably why you've been reluctant to say anything about your miscarriage," Debbie nodded her head to agree. "You definitely need to get it out in the open," Emily continued. "Remember what I said yesterday about keeping secrets. You need to take the initiative. His reaction will give you a good indication as to how your relation will go later on in life." Paul Prescott sat in seat C3 on the southbound bus heading to Wannington, West Virginia, by way of Portsmouth, Ironton, and Ashland, Kentucky. Magnolia was a request stop with pickups and drop-offs on Main Street at Zeke's. The young man watched with the unfamiliar terrain unfolding in front of him with anticipation of what would happen when the bus came to a stop. For the dozenth time since leaving the depot in downtown Columbus, he thrust his hand in his pocket to assure that the small box containing the diamond ring hadn't accidentally fallen out. The bus driver watched him in the rearview mirror and smiled. He knew what was going on in the young man's mind. Debbie and Emily had a long heart-to-heart before leaving the house to meet Paul at Zeke's Cafe. I called some friends of yours after our talk yesterday, Emily revealed. They'll be meeting us inside and will help support any decision you make. They arrived to find an empty dining room save for the people Emily invited to witness the day's events. Debbie immediately noted her mother and her younger brother, Donnie. I had no idea you were in town until Mrs. Stevens called us the other day, Mrs. Wallace greeted her daughter. Are you all right? I'm fine, Mom, really, Debbie declared while giving her mother a hug. It's just that I had this business to attend to and I needed some room. I stayed with the Wyndhams in their spare bedroom. She looked over and acknowledged Tank and Emmeline sitting in a nearby booth. Mrs. Wallace gave her daughter a kiss before Debbie paid attention to Donnie. Tricia Michaels, Glenn Michaels' wife and co-owner of the cafe, beckoned for Debbie to come to see her. I gave the regular staff the rest of the afternoon off, Tricia told Debbie. I'll be your server. Glenn and Jabo are at the counter just in case you need them. Both waved and nodded. Debbie knew that if there was going to be a scene, she wouldn't have to worry. Her friends were there, and her friends would be there to support her no matter the outcome of a revelation. Debbie played with little Donnie until Emily cleared her throat. Time, she said. The clock over the counter read 1:30. Debbie Wallace walked outside, crossed the street, and waited on the memorial bench for the bus to come. The bus driver pulled off the divided highway and onto Main Street at exactly 1:34. At 1:35, his nervous passenger would step off the bus, allowing the other passengers the assurance that their stops on down the line would be on time. Looks like your lady's waiting, the driver declared when he coasted to a stop. Paul saw her there, standing next to the bench through the front windshield. His moment of truth had arrived. He rehearsed exactly what he would do and exactly what he would say. By the time the bus was back on the highway headed south, Debbie Wallace would be his fiancée. He pulled his backpack from the overhead rack and moved to the front of the bus. Thanks, Paul thought, after the driver told him good luck. He didn't think he'd need it. He'd be proven wrong within 5 minutes. Debbie Wallace greeted Paul Prescott by taking his hand, pulling him toward her, and giving him a quick kiss on the cheek. She sensed that he was nervous as she was. They exchanged a few pleasantries while the bus roared off. Paul missed his first opportunity to propose when she suggested that they go into the cafe across the street to talk and to get a drink. He followed her into the cafe, past the owner, had he known it, and a bearded man sitting at the counter. She led him to a table near the center of the dining room. After seating Debbie, he did a quick inventory of the other patrons before sitting down himself. Aside from the two men at the counter involved in a quiet conversation, he saw another man about his age and a woman, probably his mother. Another party consisting of two women and a small child sat two tables away. The women appeared to be slightly interested. The child seemed to watch him intently. A server came to take their order. A couple of house-style iced teas and a small salad for me, Debbie ordered. How about you? She asked her escort. Nothing for me, thanks, he replied. He doubted that he would be able to keep anything down, at least until he completed the business at hand. The server went into the order, or put the order into the kitchen. Paul and Debbie held hands across the table. I know why you're here, Paul, Debbie stated, looking him straight in the eye. Before we jump off the precipice, you need to know something. Part of her expected him to say something like, oh, whatever you have to say, whatever you think I need to know, it doesn't matter. He said nothing. So she continued. 4 years ago, I became pregnant. You were raped? Paul's response was immediate. A look of concern crossed his face. No. Paul's concern turned to confusion at her answer. He looked around the room again and focused on Donnie. That's your son, isn't it? He said, pointing to the child. No, that's my little brother. I miscarried. Yeah, right, Paul sneered. She's telling the truth, Mrs. Wallace said while she stood. Debbie lost her child. What are you saying? Are you saying she had an abortion, or is that her child and you're covering for her? Paul's voice was getting louder as he spoke. What are you trying to pull? He continued. What kind of woman are you, Debbie Wallace? She's a damn better woman than you'll ever deserve, Hank Wyndham declared as he stood to confront the visitor. And she's right. We're just a couple of foolish kids when it happened, that's all. We made a mistake. We all make mistakes. Get over it. You raped her, now you're trying to whitewash the affair? Paul's face was turning red with anger. Tell me exactly what happened, he demanded, turning his attention back to the woman he had intended to ask to marry him. Did you or did you not sleep with that man over there? Did you or did you not have a child because you slept with him? Did you have an abortion? Tell me! Tell me! Debbie was in tears. She shrunk back to Emily to seek solace. Do you have any idea how much you've just hurt this woman? Emily asked. Her voice was calm and steady while she spoke. It took courage for her to tell you what she just told you. Just like it took courage for her to persevere and move on after making the mistakes she made. If you came here to ask for her hand because you thought she was perfect, well, she isn't. I'm not either, nor is anyone in this room. If you came here seeking perfection, you've come to the wrong place. If you came here seeking a partner to share your dreams, to face life with you no matter what it throws at you, then you need to apologize and start mending fences. Fast. When Emily finished, everyone in the room except for Debbie and Donnie stood and applauded. Paul Prescott's dream of asking Debbie Wallace to be his wife ended in a flurry of humiliation and embarrassment. He had figured on every possible scenario, every possible way for this afternoon to conclude. He had not figured on the possibility of her revealing something to him which would taint their relationship in such a way that it would become too much of a burden to bear. Without another word, he stalked out of Zeke's cafe. Glenn Michaels followed him out the door and offered to drive him back to Columbus. The offer was accepted. It would be quite some time before Debbie Wallace saw Paul Prescott again. Thank you, all of you, Debbie told those gathered around her in the dining room shortly after Paul left. You've probably saved me from a lifetime of heartache and regret. Everyone left the cafe except for Debbie and Hank. Tricia came out with a couple of to-go cups of the house iced tea. I do have to lock up, she told the couple. Hope you don't mind. They thanked their host and headed out the front door to sit on the memorial bench across the street. We're pretty messed up, aren't we? Hank asked when they sat down. Yep, no doubt, she agreed. They sat and watched people going about their business on a warm July afternoon. I need to get back to the yard, Hank told Debbie. You need a ride somewhere? She hesitated just a moment before accepting his invitation. For a brief moment, she saw her children and their father sipping an iced tea in front of Zeke's on a summer afternoon. A little choked up there. That shouldn't have been. But that's chapter 24. Again, happy Thanksgiving. That's coming up here in less than 24 hours. In the meantime, getting ready for chapter 25. We've got Beasley and Pastor Dan staring down a shotgun. That's going to be next week on Thursday, as usual. Until then, it's been a veritable ball. Don't take any nickels, and see you out there.